And I think that the book itself gives an answer to that question. He wrote it, as he states in the preface, in 1948, precisely during the days when Israel was fighting for its existence in the War of Independence. But the book was published 12, if not 13 years later, in 1960, 1961. So one of the questions I will be discussing is, why did the publishing house find it necessary to issue this book in 1960? What happened then? Why was this book necessary? This book is a very personal statement of the historian, in which he writes about his own education as a student in the then University of Bern in Switzerland. He was a historian, was preparing to present his work, his thesis, as a magisterial dissertation there, but was cut abruptly by the advent of World War I, and then he had to leave Switzerland, as all the Russian subjects, which he was then, had to do, and traveled, like Lenin later, through Germany. He was given permission to go through an enemy land and arrive in through Sweden to Finland and then Petersburg. So the first part of the book is actually the description of the events of World War I, Dinaburg's role in the Jewish life of St. Petersburg, which incidentally he had no right to live in, being Jewish. And St. Petersburg then had very strict rules of Jewish residence, and he was prohibited from staying there. And his struggle for the right to stay there during the night, for instance. Then, very abruptly, one comes to the events of February 1917, the revolution, his role in the public life. The book, the second part of the book, goes up to 1921, when he found himself in Odessa, together with the same Bialik after whom the publishing house was named, and Bialik was his friend. They both, together with other Jewish intellectuals, were able to hire a boat, Anastasia, a Russian imperial boat then, boarded they and their families. There were about 50 people altogether with the families. They boarded this ship and left for Palestine. He arrived in 1921 in Jaffa, then the British Palestine. And there he stayed till his death 50 years later. What was so special about the book? Two things. First of all, a very detailed and I would say professional attention to memory. He makes it a point to put down and to remember all the conversations he had with everybody whom he met during the fateful months of 1917 in Petersburg. People in the street, members of the Duma, his friends, anybody. He just puts it down and presents in this book verbatim, as the words were said. And he discusses the role of memory and the duty of the professional historian to attend to remembering things as they are. The second striking point of the book is his insistence on distinguishing between the facts of the Russian Revolution as they presented themselves to him during 1917-1921, and the facts of the Jewish life, in which he took an active and sometimes leading part during those years. And I will begin very briefly with the second. He insists on distinguishing these two lines because he states the following. The Russian Revolution is, first of all, the Russian Revolution, not the revolution among the many revolutions which took place in the history of mankind, like French Revolution, with which it was compared, or the English Revolution. No, it is the Russian Revolution. It is a revolution initiated, carried out, and being, as it were, attended to by the Russian people. And by the Russian people, he means mostly and only the Orthodox Russian people, or the people who were Orthodox, ceased to be. What is so special about this fact? In Dinur's point of view, which was probably the general point of view of historians and just intellectual people in those years, a people, a nation, has a certain energy. And this energy accompanies it and, as it were, promotes its events, its attitudes during many hundreds of years. So thus he examines the Russian Revolution. It is the natural result of the historical development of the Russian nation. As such, he states that the February Revolution did not begin in February 1917. It began in 1903 with the so-called Kishinev pogrom, that is to say, the killing of about 80 or more people, Jewish people, in the then Kishinev, the capital of Bessarabia. What followed was a sequence of events, each more and more bloody, each more and more violent, while they led to the revolution of 1905. And then from there on to 1917. One can argue with this point of view of Dinaburg, but that's what he states. And as this revolution being described in this manner, the historian says that he is only an observer of these events. He insists on the fact that he cannot take a direct part in it. He can observe and render it, as it were, make it public for anyone who wishes to know. But he certainly cannot take part in these events. From this follows Dinur's tenet that it's incidentally incumbent of any Jewish person in the then Russian Empire not to take part in the events of the Russian Revolution. And those who did take part in these events did it, as it were, as individuals, not as members of the Jewish people. And in most cases, if not in all cases, this participation in Dinur's view, was alien, was inimical to the interests of the Jewish people. What they did, what those Jews did, led only to the increase of anti-Semitism, led to the deviation in the natural course of the Russian Revolution as led by the Russian people, and had to be avoided by all means possible. Just one point as it were, highlight his analysis. He insists that the starting point of the reason for the Russian Revolution was not a Marxist conflict of classes, was not the economic interests, but the natural aversion of the Russian people to violence. The very fact that everything in the Russian Empire was done through either organized or individual violence. And by violence, he means not just verbal violence, but actual physical violence. This was the reason why the Russian people rebelled. This was the reason why the Russian people actually resented all authority, because all authority tended to be physically violent. And in order to improve the situation, as it were, the Russian people, in Dinur's words, opposed to that organized violence their own violence. And when and if the Jewish people were in the middle of it, they certainly suffered. The second part of this parallel, namely the Jewish life, is altogether different, because Dinur insists on, when he describes the events of the Russian Revolution, it is sometimes very difficult to understand what political spectrum a person or a group belongs to, whether they are cadets or Octobrists or social revolutionaries. He mentions it, but without, as it were, an analysis. It's clear that for him it's more or less vague. But when he analyzes the Jewish life, he absolutely knows the very tiny details of which political group that or another person, his relative, his friend, just an acquaintance, belongs to. Whether it is one of the many socialist parties or groups which united the Jewish people, like Poalition, for instance, the Zionist party, very close to communists, which is translated as the workers of Zion, or the so-called SERP. In English, it would be translated as sickle. But actually, it is an acronym of the first words of Socialistическая Еврейская Рабочая Партия, Socialist Jewish Workers' Party. Also a socialist party, a social democratic party, of which Dinur himself was one of the founding members. Or whether it is the Bund. Now I don't think that anybody remembers the name of the Bund, which Lenin used to mention in his writings hundreds of times, which was one of his, as it were, first enemies. Bund was a Jewish social democratic party which united hundreds of thousands of people in the Pale of Jewish Settlement. And about all these people, Dinur, who often was their political adversary, if not enemy, and knew what they were after, what they pursued, what they thought about everybody. He writes in a sort of nice condescension. Yes, well, such things also happen. We know them. Most of them were killed during the revolution. So that's well, it is clear why Dinur would, as it were, feel sorry for them or feel some kind of relation to them. Just one thing before, and I'm starting to finish it up. Among the but the activities of the Bund, one sees that he doesn't like them, and he doesn't like the people involved in it. And among the people whom he mentions is the father of the late Viktor Genrikhovich Erlich. We used to know, and for one very intimately, Viktor Erlich, who was one of the great literary scholars of the United States at Yale University. His father, Genrich Erlich, or Henrik Erlich, was one of the leaders of the Bund, killed by Stalin in 1942 in Kubishev in the prison. Several times Dinur mentions Henrik Erlich's name by saying something like, the goal of this person, as one would say in an American English, the chutzpah, of this person is beyond description. He just went to Stockholm to appear in a communist conference, or close to communist conference, as a representative of the Jewish Social Democratic Party, the Bund, and spoke on behalf of the entire Jewish people. Who authorized him to make such statements? But then, on the next day, he took the word and spoke as a full representative of the entire Russian people. And Dinur, one can see how Dinur shrugged his shoulders after that. So his attitude to the Jewish people is, as it were, very nuanced. One sees that he actually is very sympathetic to them, but doesn't shy from criticizing them and mentioning their, in his view, errors and things like that. One word why this was necessary in 1960. In 1960, all the Jewish parties and the people whom he mentions in the book were already very thoroughly dead. Most of them were killed by the Germans. Some of them were killed by the Russian anti-revolutionaries. And the parties ceased to exist. Dinur felt it necessary to bring to keep in memory, to memorize all those different lanes and roads through which the Jewish political life went in 1917-1921. Let me just mention one point. Dinur, along with being one of the founders of the Jewish Socialist Party, was a staunch Zionist. That is to say, he believed in having all the Jewish people live in Palestine, the then Palestine, Turkish Palestine, and then the British Palestine, and then the State of Israel. During the years which Dinur describes in his book, 1917-1921, less than 1% of the entire Jewish population were close to that point of view. They numbered 100,000 people, 100,050 people, something like this. All other millions of the Jewish masses were opposed to it, and almost all of them perished. I promised to round up this short presentation with a remark of my own. And this concerns the fact that from the description by Dinur of the Jewish political life, it appears that most of the political activities were conducted by the socialist or social democratic parties. And these parties were somewhat close to, or if not close to, stood side by side with the Russian party of the Mensheviks, the Russian Social Democratic Party of the Mensheviks. May I add my own remark that from a political perspective and a historical perspective, what happened in these later years, in our own years, is that, in my view at least, and Dinur everywhere states that the victory of the Bolsheviks is inevitable, something like this, that you shouldn't bother with interfering in the historical processes of the Russian Revolution, because the Bolsheviks are a natural, as it were, outgrowth of such processes. One can argue with it. But in my view, what happened was not the victory of the Bolsheviks, but the victory of the Mensheviks. Because the communist system collapsed not only, perhaps not really, as a result of the internal developments in Russia, which my good friend Georges Niva described so eloquently, but to a large extent also due to the international confrontation between the communist ideology and the anti-communist ideology. My point is that the anti-communist ideology, that is to say, all the Russian exile publications, but not all of them, many of them, after 1947 till 1991, perhaps, all of them in the West were in this or another way guided by the former Mensheviks. And many of them I knew and admired myself. Thank you.
Thank you, Professor Segal.